Welcome back to America, Back on Track for Monday, January 22nd. My goodness, think about it. 2 years from today, we will have a new president. But in the meantime, let's deal with reality. I'm your correspondent, Tony Seaton. Welcome to America, Back on Track. Today, in our first half hour, we're going to be joined by Mike Whitney. He's a freelance journalist who writes about the economy. He's going to be talking to us today about the housing bursting bubble, or bubble, the housing bubble bursting. Okay. And in our second half hour, we're going to be talking with Paul Marks, who's a script doctor. And considering what comes out of Hollywood, there's a lot to be working on. Finally, today on Seaton Notes, we're going to be talking about Slick Willie's ambitious wife. But first, some thoughts on the news. Over the past 30 years, since the first anti-smoking regulations were instituted in Berkeley, California, good for them, they get some things right, enough states and communities have passed similar laws that now half of the people in our country live in places where smoking is prohibited, in public areas such as workplaces or restaurants. Obviously, there are some limitations, you know, some places you can, some places you can't, but it's a step forward. It's been a long process. At least one proponent of nationwide smoking ban says that his group believes that we'll be smoke-free in a few years. From your lips to God's ears. And it's about time. It's ridiculous that we haven't done this sooner, like right after the Surgeon General said smoking cigarettes could kill us back in the mid-60s, but greed and corrupted government officials have preserved tobacco sales, hundreds of billions of dollars of requited greed at the expense of millions and millions and millions of lives. At the very least, we should stop all advertising of tobacco products. The tobacco companies wouldn't be putting out those tons of money that they do spending on print ads and billboards if they didn't think those buys were delivering consumers. So every time a consumer responds to those messages buying their damn cigarettes, they damage their health, at least, and jeopardize the well-being of those around them, including pets and children who don't have a choice about getting out of the way. I don't think we need to ban smoking, but we should protect everyone else from the smoke. Give non-smokers the right not to be intruded upon instead of thinking that smokers have rights to intrude. Step one, ban all smoking in public places inside and out. Step two, require all tobacco producers to convert to healthy crops. We shouldn't be exporting death to other countries either. U.S. officials have gone public with their confusion, or alleged confusion, about China ignoring the world's response to them blowing up one of their aging weather satellites with a missile. The successful missile shot after two misses was reported last week. Washington and a number of other capitals raised a complaint, but Beijing didn't say anything. So Stephen Hadley, our trusty national security advisor, yeah, right, trust, he was a sycophant to Condi Rice, announced that maybe China's political leaders didn't know what their military was doing. What? This is all just posturing, of course, with diplomats running messages up the proverbial flagpole to see who salutes them. The arrogance of the U.S. to pretend that they are in charge of other nations shooting missiles into space is beyond amusing. Actually, it's not amusing at all. An interesting story in the L.A. Times about the Vatican maybe trying to improve relations with China after more than 60 years of discord. The Vatican maintains relations with Taiwan, which Beijing, of course, doesn't like. And though the Chinese have allowed a restricted form of Catholicism to be practiced in recent years, they've also been cracking down on underground Catholics with a stronger allegiance to Rome. Dozens of bishops and priests have disappeared. It's a curious situation, but there's some speculation that Beijing might be interested in enhancing its image abroad before the start of the 2008 Olympics. Some people think that the Cheney-Bush administration squelching stem cell research is just an overinflated moral thing. It's not. According to a senior person at the NIH, the limitations on federal funding for human embryonic stem cell research have literally blocked potential medical breakthroughs. You get that? The National Institutes of Health say that failure to explore this vital area has meant that major medical discoveries have been needlessly, mindlessly delayed. Only delayed because the discoveries will be made at some point either by our scientists or those abroad from embryonic or other stem cells. In the meantime, millions will suffer because of the Bushies. Millions will die who might have lived at least longer. What will it take for America to wake up and impeach these perverts? Here's some food for thought. The Justice Department has revealed that state prison inmates, particularly blacks, are living longer on average than people on the outside. Yes. In fact, the men behind bars are outliving those on the outside by 20%. This ain't just statistical, folks. For blacks, the rate was more than 50% lower death rate on the inside. And that kind of skewed the numbers because it was so huge. Because the whites and the browns are have slightly higher death rates outside of prison. It seems kind of startling when you realize that these numbers say that the lives of black men are better in prison than outside. Finally, one definition of the word chutzpah is the guy who's brought up on charges of murdering his parents who pleads for mercy because he is an orphan. A woman working for a Sheraton hotel company was fired because she was keeping a journal on a company computer during company time. She'd been handwriting in the journal and told she couldn't do it, so she started typing her journal on the computer. She wrote, "This typing thing seems to be doing the trick. It just looks like I'm hard at work on something very important." Said the administrative judge denying a request for unemployment insurance, the journal was proof of her refusal to work and the woman's, quote, amusement at getting away with it. Should have kept your day job, honey. There we are. We will be back in a couple of moments with Mike Whitney talking about the bursting housing bubble, and later with Paul Marks, who's a script doctor for Hollywood. Stay with us. You're listening to America Back on Track.
Hueyelhauser talks to customers of First National, South Valley, and San Benito Banks, local members of the network of preferred community banks.
We're here to talk with people about their local banking. Now, are you banking or are you just talking?
I'm doing both.
Well, that's part of being at a local bank, isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly.
But it has all the benefits of a big bank.
Oh, yes, sir. Yeah, they help me out with all my banking needs, the whole nine yards.
Now, it's a community bank, but it's part of a network of banks.
Well, I think that's the most important. It's full service, and it's like a family-style atmosphere in there. And that was one thing that was very, very attractive to us.
Certainly, yeah, because I don't like to go to a bank and stand in a long line and have to wait and then have some grumpy teller say, okay, another customer.
Yeah.
But they're happy to see you.
You're putting money in, you're taking money out.
I put it in, yeah, my wife takes it out.
Above and beyond banking from the network of preferred community banks, available locally at First National Bank of Central California, South Valley National Bank, and San Benito Bank.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and the victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of rancor. You got married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
We're back, America Back on Track. And if you want information about who we've got on and links to their work and that sort of thing, you go to qnnamerica.com. Our guest today in this first half hour is a fellow named Mike Whitney. He's a freelance journalist. He's up in Washington. And I got on to him because of a piece he wrote about the housing bubble bloodbath. Mike, welcome to America Back on Track.
Hi, Tony. Thanks for having me.
So what is it like, first of all, to be a freelance writer? The Internet must create a whole bunch of new opportunities.
You know, the Internet is really the perfect democracy because it's set up so that if you have something to say and you can say it with some element of creativity and generate enough interest, you'll appear in a number of different sites. If not, you're just, you know, by the wayside. So it's competitive, but it's fair. It's balanced in that respect that if you want to really put some energy in it, as far as rewards financially, there's nothing. I don't know how you can make money out of it. But for people who are intellectually curious, it's unlimited possibilities.
Marry a rich wife, right? Or a rich woman.
Exactly.
Well, you write for publications, online publications, including Counterpunch, Alternate Truth Out, those kinds of folks?
True.
And they really do have some very fine writing on it. I don't say that because I agree with a lot of what's said, but there's some very good writing on those those places, and it's worth keeping up on them.
Yeah, what I notice is that the lines between liberal and conservative are getting more and more foggy as the civil liberties and economic issues push a lot of us closer together, particularly libertarians and leftists. So that's kind of interesting.
Explain that, if you would.
Well, libertarians have similar views on what's going on in the economy now, I think, as a lot of people on the left. They see that the excessive account deficit and the deficits at home and the way that we're abusing the dollar. We have this great privilege because the dollar is basically the international currency, and we are undermining it by, I think the Federal Reserve has doubled the money supply in the last 7 years. And, of course, eventually that's going to have the effects of hyperinflation on the economy here, I would think. And libertarians seem to think the same way, that there should be less intervention and those kinds of things. On the civil liberties issues, people on the left are very in line with the people on, say, Lou Rockwell or antiwar.com, who are a collection of conservatives who are against the war, who take a similar position about the Military Commissions Act and the Patriot Act and all these other things that are basically curtailed civil liberties. So there is this kind of informal alliance, and the same thing is true with the media issues, this conglomeration of media issues where you find people from the far right aligning with the Bill Moyers and the Democracy Nows and those kinds of places.
It is quite daunting to find oneself in agreement with someone like a Bob Barr.
Yes, it is, but I very much am so.
Yeah, yeah.
And Ron Paul, too, who I didn't agree with, say, 6 years about many things. But hopefully some of these other issues, which are important, I suppose, like gay marriage and things of that nature, will take their proper place in the priority list as not dominating the whole, you know, political landscape as far as the national dialogue on these things.
I started this broadcast by noting that in 2 years we will have a new president. What's your take, Mike, on what's going to happen in the run-up to the 2008 vote? Are we going to be looking, as I expect and hope, at a third party?
I would like to see that happen. I would like to see someone who is independent of both parties and can represent the American worker, basically, because I think the middle class is getting crushed under Democrats and Republicans. We got to remember it was Bill Clinton who passed NAFTA, and we've lost 3 million manufacturing jobs, over 200,000 high-paying, high-tech jobs, and people are being incentivized to move their businesses offshore. I think there's been something like in the nature of 6,000 major corporations in the last 10 years that have moved offshore or over to China or whatever, and we've become a service-oriented society. And so we need a party that represents those interests, and the Democrats really don't, unfortunately. There's only 9% of the workforce is unionized, and whether you like union or not, they did have a voice at one time in the political system, and I think that that was beneficial for the society as a whole, for the middle class.
I really don't understand why there is any affection, or was for, or it still is, especially now, for Bill Clinton.
You know, you'll find on the far left, which is where I hang out of the normal orbit, there isn't. And for many reasons, particularly, he would not pass the, well, he passed NAFTA, he passed the Telecommunications Act, which created these massive, 90% of what we see is from seven major news businesses, organizations. Serbia was, it was well concealed, but it was a war that was, we pounded Sarajevo for what, 87, or Belgrade for 87 days without any UN authority. It wasn't authorized by the UN. It was just better concealed than Iraq, but it really had no international justification. So no, Clinton, you know, he was good on creating this great prosperity.
We'll argue that point when we come back after these messages. We're talking with Mike Whitney. Stay tuned. You're listening to America Back on Track.
Using clear plastic removable aligners, Invisalign comfortably straightens your teeth without drawing attention to them. It works in most cases in less than a year, and you're left with a fabulous smile. Call me, Dr. Richard Bianco, for a free consultation.
Dr. Richard Bianco is one of a few local dentists that is advanced certified in Invisalign. With two locations to serve you, in Monterey, call 372-3985. In Watsonville, call 722-3308. Or visit Dr. Bianco's website at montereydentalcare.com. Now there's a comfortable way to straighten your teeth.
Attention homeowners, this is Sharon Law Tucker. You've heard me talk about various mortgage types over the past several months. Now I want to talk to you about reverse mortgages. I believe that quality of life and having options is extremely important. The biggest concern for most seniors today is to stay in their homes, yet they are living on an income that can no longer meet their basic living needs. Through reverse mortgage loan products, I can help senior homeowners stay in their homes, get tax-free cash for any purpose, including monthly income, home improvements, medical care, travel, and much more. I can help you remove the stress and worry from your life, take the burden of responsibility from your children, and enjoy a better quality of life. If you are a senior homeowner, call me today for a free copy of the Reverse Mortgage Handbook. I'll send it to you at no cost, no obligation. Phone me, Sharon Law Tucker, at the Reverse Mortgage Center, 831-809-1705, 831-809-1705. Pacific Home Lending is licensed by the California DRE, license number 01254837.
We're back. America back on track. And with us by phone is Mike Whitney, freelance writer. Before the break, we were talking about Bill Clinton. And Mike, you were given Slick Willie credit for the economy. My thought was that he was just a surfer, caught the right wave.
That could be true. But regarding international relations, a lot has to do with propping up confidence in our economy and the dollar. And I think by showing, you know, at least by being prudent in curtailing the deficit spending, which used to be the Republican task, which is another reason why I wasn't so, you know, impressed with him. It was basically, when you talk about the things he did, they seem more Republican in nature. But anyway, the fiscal responsibility part of it. I think he, you know, right now there's this terrible sense that the dollar, if people stop, if the foreign banks, central banks, start purchasing $2.5 billion a day to cover our $800 billion account deficits, that the dollar is just going to drop through the floor because we're no longer a manufacturing economy and no one knows where the bottom really is. So I think that at least he projected that kind of confidence that Bush isn't, because Bush is basically telling the world that you're going to mop up our red ink from here until oblivion, and I just don't think the world's going to accept that.
Sort of like the chief morale officer on the Titanic saying, not to worry, we're just stopping for ice.
Well, I sense that you must be a Republican or conservative, and I'm just wondering how many, most of my emails now are from conservatives who feel so betrayed.
Well, actually, I for the longest time was a liberal Democrat, but I'm one of the reasons why you're on is because we share an idea that the facts about our financial or economic situation are vital. Point of fact, China holds almost $1 trillion in American notes, Japan and Korea another $1 trillion, and if any of them makes even the slightest hint toward shifting over to the euro, we don't have an economy.
Yeah. And there are actually more, there's more value in euros now than there, it actually overtook dollar-based assets in the bonds division. What was it last month? You may have seen that. That seems to be inevitable. What we're not seeing about this whole Iranian situation and the Venezuela situation and the fact that Russia, which pumps 13% of daily output of petroleum now, which has overtaken Saudi Arabia, they've switched to euros and to rubles. They're moving away from the dollar. The United Arab Emirates is moving away from the dollar, Venezuela and Iran. And if we don't have the dollar propped up by, if oil is not does not continue to be denominated in dollars, the dollar is going to be eye to eye with a peso. And how would you like to wake up some morning and see that, you know, 100% of your assets are valued at about 40% of their original value? That wouldn't be a good situation. And so, yeah, I'm concerned about that, and I think we all should be.
The problem seems to be that we don't pay attention unless we see the flames leaping out of the roof or something like that, and particularly on these economics issues, the economics being the dismal science, we just are so turned off on them. But there are a whole bunch of folks in this country who are going to get up close and personal with these problems when their arms come to a new rate.
Yes, they are, and most of them are going to reset. Well, last year, the adjustable rate mortgages, which are these kind of exotic, new, untested loans that people are getting for their homes on their mortgages, $1 trillion is going to reset on those this year. And so we should see, we've already seen a spike in foreclosures in the subprime loan market. The New York Times is estimating that 20% of the subprime market is going to go into foreclosure. Now that's 2.2 million people, and which translates into about 10 million people, and if you're counting family members, and that's just the subprime market. But these ARMs, which have all these piggyback loans and these no interest loans and these all this loan and that loan, we don't know what the results are going to be. But I assume that the Federal Reserve, who has all the relevant charts and data, could tell you to the person how many people are going to go into foreclosure. And they're going to be dropping rates. And when they drop rates, it'll soften the landing for the housing market, but then foreign investment goes away. And we need, again, we're caught between a rock and a hard place. If we don't get that $2.5 billion infusion every day, then the dollar is going to go through the floor. So I don't have, people keep saying, what do I have a crystal ball and see what's happening? But the numbers are of such a size that you have to think recession or worse. The housing bubble, what the economist calls the largest equity bubble in history, total real estate value in the United States increased between 2000 and 2006 by $11 trillion. Where'd that money come from? Not from wages.
Smoking.
That's a bubble.
Smoke and mirrors.
And you're in Monterey, correct?
Yes.
I mean, that, you know, San Francisco, I get emails from people in Sacramento and Orlando and San Diego. Of course, Orlando's not, you know, in Florida. But, you know, the hot coastal markets that are just, you know, tanking, you know. And, of course, if you live in, you know, Devil's Lake, North Dakota, you're safe. You haven't seen the increase, and you're not going to see the decrease. But by the end of next year, we're going to really, the fur is going to fly, because $1 trillion is coming due, and that's just not going to go away.
We will be back with more with Mike Whitney talking about the housing bubble and what's coming up for our economy after these messages. You're listening to America Back on Track. We'll be right back.
65 degrees. It's the average year-round temperature in Monterey, and it's also the name of a brand new lifestyle magazine on the peninsula. Unlike most of the other magazines published in Monterey, 65 Degrees is aimed at local residents, not tourists. That's why you'll find it chock full of articles about interesting local people, events, businesses, and issues that you'll never see in those big, thick, slick magazines with movie stars on the cover. The first issue of 65 Degrees featured Royal Seafoods founder Joe Panisi and his son Gino. Other stories in the premiere edition featured radio personality Barbara Alexander and sports businessman Dave Stamm of Cages. Ever heard of them? That's our point. There are thousands of interesting stories on the peninsula. 65 Degrees magazine aims to cover them all. You can pick up 65 Degrees free at most stores and newsstands in the Monterey area. And if you want to advertise in this important new medium, call 626-4457. Space in the January issue is going fast, so call now for rates and further information. 626-4457. Get in on the ground floor while you still can. 65 Degrees, the magazine of the Monterey Peninsula.
The Monterey Mattress Marquee presents Tales from the Voicemail.
Hello, you've reached Brian Gingrich of Monterey Mattress Company. Please leave a message at the tone, and I'll return your call as soon as I'm able. Thank you. Have a great day.
Hey, Brian, this is Jana Weston. My adjustable bed was delivered, I guess it was Wednesday, and I just wanted to thank you very much and tell you that it's the most comfortable bed I've ever slept on. I'm just enjoying it more than you can know. I can't even believe what I was sleeping on before when I compare now. It's fabulous, and the delivery guys were great, really professional and quick, but nice. And it was just altogether not as painful as I thought it was going to be. I just want to thank you for the good deal, and I will definitely be recommending you all over the place.
We can be found online at MontereyMattress.com or in person on the Monterey Peninsula in California.
We're back, America back on track, and we're talking with freelance journalist Mike Whitney. Mike, you used the term reset when you're talking about the arms. I don't know if everyone's familiar with that. It means that people got in at a low introductory rate, everyone can buy, and now the period of that rate is expiring. What kind of increases are people going to face?
The figures I've seen is that a lot of people say if their house payment is something $1,300-$1,400 a month, it could almost double. And a great many of these people, there was a terrific article in the Washington Post yesterday, I don't have the author's name, but it covered this topic, and it was saying how the great body of people out there don't even understand the loans they took out, and they have no idea how this is going to, steadily increase in value as far as, their mortgage payments. One thing I would like to mention, though, and this will be of great interest, I think, to some people out there who may have bought late in the peak market of 2005 or 2006 and have one of these glamorous loans and are only paying the interest payments right now, or only some of these loans that you only pay part of the interest. So the actual amount of your mortgage increases every month. But the thing is we're going to hear a lot about...
Mike, people need to register that. Yeah. If you're only paying part of the interest payment, that means that you're adding to the total amount that you owe the bank.
Exactly. So some people, and I would say people who are basically never should have qualified for a loan to begin with. First of all, if you can't put down $5,000 or $6,000 on a $300,000 or $400,000 house, you really don't show the kind of economic maturity to qualify you for a house or a responsibility like you're taking on. And I think the banks will eventually decide that that's the case and go back to more traditional methods of loaning money. But the same is true as if you can't pay some of the principal, if you can't even pay the interest payment for the month, what are you doing in a house? These are people who got in by different devices, some of them liar loans, people misstating their earnings, et cetera, and with the expecting that the common philosophy is housing prices never go down. So if I go into this house, it's only going to increase in value by next year. So I'll take out the maximum I can. Well, they're facing what they call negative equity, and this is a question of who is really going to be hurt the most by the housing bubble. If you bought late, in the peak market of 2005, 2006, you're only paying off an interest-only loan, and all of a sudden, housing prices start to slip. So take, for example, you bought a house for $400,000, and next year it's reassessed at, say, $300,000 or $325,000. Well, suddenly, you're shackled to a loan where you're paying about $100,000 more on an asset that's lost that amount in value. So, you know, you're paying off imaginary equity. There's no more equity there. Is that clear? Maybe I'm not being clear enough about that.
No, it's clear and it's startling, and you wonder why anyone bothers to have the small print put in front of them, because they don't understand it.
Yes, but I think that, you know, stock market bubble collapsed and they made interest rates, remember Greenspan dropped it down to 1%, the Federal Reserve was essentially giving away money to keep the economy going. So this created, obviously they knew it was going to create another speculative bubble. And as I said, they have all the relevant data, the charts and graphs, so they knew where the money was going. And they knew that 15% of the housing market was pure speculators who were, you know, I get emails from people in Orlando who are saying that people were buying houses down there for $400,000 and $500,000 sight unseen and flipping them, you know. And that's how much money was in the market at one time and how ridiculous it was. And now, of course, it's deflating, and people are going to lose their life savings or be shackled to a house for the rest of their life that is diminishing in value and paying more for the mortgage. So a lot of these people are going to leave the keys to the house on the kitchen counter and just leave. So I expect to see by the end of, you can have me back and tell me, you know, Mike, you were so wrong, you're all gloom and doom, or say, boy, this is pretty grim.
Well, it's something that I and a number of my colleagues in this area, economic journalism, have been talking about for a while and have been surprised at the delay. You have in your piece, Housing Bubble Bloodbath, quote, the whole catastrophe was cooked up by Sir Alan Greenspan and his coterie of brandy-drooling elites at the Federal Reserve. What was their motivation, just to keep money in the economy?
You know, it does sound very conspiratorial, but I think this is almost a class-based phenomenon. I mean, for example, there's the European Union, European Central Bank, they have strict guidelines for the economy. You know, you can only have deficits that run like about 2%. They're very prudent about their economic numbers. And you say you're involved in economics. You know, you probably disagree with the commerce numbers on the new job reports and the Christmas spending. I mean,
yeah.
They're massaging all these numbers. And now the Federal Reserve does not even provide the M3, which is they're basically telling you how much money is in circulation. So none of us know what the real value of a dollar is anymore because it's all smoke and mirrors. So all I can say is that they have all the relevant data. They knew. How can you miss a $10 trillion bubble? You're creating it. You're printing the money.
Yeah.
You're keeping the economy. They know where this stuff is going. And now they say, well, maybe we missed that one. Well, how could you miss it? You have the data.
It's too big.
So
yeah.
Whatever the plan is, and I'm probably way off base on that, but it seems to me like...
Mike, I got to cut you off there. We'll have you back again. Thank you for being with us on America
Thanks,
Back
Tony.
On Track.
It's a pleasure to talk to you. Bye.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and the victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of rancor. You got married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
We're back. America back on track. I'm your correspondent, Tony Seaton. Joining us in a very major change of moods is a fellow named Paul Marx, who describes himself, quote, as a stealth screenwriter making his living from optioning screenplays of his own and rewriting, script doctoring, other people's scripts or developing their ideas. Paul, welcome to America Back on Track.
Thank you, Tony.
You have a delightful site, and you have some of your writing on it, and I wanted to get into that right away because here's a piece. Hollywood Boulevard is the strutting peacock itself, an amalgam of types straight out of central casting, punks with spiked hair that could make you bleed, bikers that will make you bleed, hookers whom you can bleed your troubles out upon, transvestites and tourists whose wallets bleed green instead of red. That's wonderful stuff.
Well, thank you. And probably very true, too.
Well, that's part of why fiction works, is because it's got to have some touchstone, some basis. And that's from Destination Unknown, which you describe as a novel in progress.
It's a novel in progress that's actually based on a screenplay that I've optioned several times, and I use the screenplay as the outline for the novel.
Let's define some terms, if we could. What does it mean when you option a screenplay?
An option is like when a producer or production company, somebody, in essence, takes out a lease on your screenplay. So they would give you a certain amount of money for a certain amount of time that they would have the exclusive rights to it. And in that time, they tried to put together a deal, maybe a package with actors, directors, financing, that kind of thing. Many things are optioned. Few things make it to actual production.
One of the concerns you would have as the writer would be that they would take up the time, say the option is for a couple of years or something, when the subject might be hot and it might not go anywhere?
That happens a lot, and, you know, one of the things that they say is you can't really write to what the current trend is. You should write from the heart, because if you do write to the current trend, you're always going to be behind the curve.
We did an interview a few weeks ago with Lee Kaplan, who produced Mrs. Paltry at the Claremont, and he had been working on producing that book and screenplay for 25 years. Of course, when you're working with someone like Joan Plowright, the work will last forever, but actually she died shortly afterwards, so I guess there are limits on everything.
Well, they're lucky she didn't die during or before, because I've had that situation where everything looks like a go, and then something happens to somebody, and everything just falls out, the bottom falls out.
One of my favorite programs was a movie. It was a pilot for a Nero Wolfe series that was done with Thayer David, and I think he died a couple of months after the production of the pilot, which was just superb.
Unfortunately, that does happen, and, you know, it's tragic when it's a good project and the project then languishes. It goes, you know, nowhere.
How do you get scripts to doctor?
Well, there's a couple of different ways. A lot of it is word of mouth at this point for me. Originally, the way that I started is I had sent a screenplay that I had written to a production company that was fairly big production company at the time. They tend to come and go a lot, too. But the development person at the company liked my writing, but they didn't want to do the script, so they called me in to see if I could work on one of their screenplays and punch it up a little bit. And so I got in to the business, my first real paying job, doing script doctoring, and it's kind of stuck with me.
It must be fun having other people's work if there's something there to work with, but frustrating if you don't.
Well, you know, a lot of times there's a lot of good stuff. In fact, a lot of times I think the writer's draft that I'm working on is often better than what they want me to do to it, because they want you to add certain elements to make it more commercial a lot of times that don't necessarily add to the project. But, yeah, if you have a good idea and a good story, good characters to start with, then it's a challenge.
Yeah, as George Carlin said, sex and violence, I like them separate.
That's true.
Now, when you are doing your writing, this may seem like a very basic question, but there was the Canadian writer Robertson Davies, magnificent writer, one of the finest in the English language, was asked by budding writers at a workshop, where do you get your ideas? And he said, where do I get my ideas? They get me and they don't let go of me until they're done with me. Is that your experience?
I think that's a real good description of it. You know, they come from everywhere. I mean, you can hear a snatch of dialogue, you can see something in the news, you can just wake up one morning and it's there. But, yeah, if they're a good one, I've got ideas that I had years ago that I still plan to work on, because they do grab you and they don't let go.
Do you write everything down?
I tend to be pretty obsessive about that. I have a lot of files of ideas, and now that we're in the computer age, it makes it so much easier to keep track of everything. Before that, you know, I'd have scraps of paper everywhere and pretend I was organized, but I really wasn't.
Explain, you do some instruction, lecturing on writing and screenwriting. What is different about writing a screenplay from other forms of writing?
Well, a screenplay is more like a blueprint. It would be like if you're building a house, the screenplay would be the blueprint for the house. It's not a finished product. Whereas if you're writing a short story or a novel, when you're done with it, that's the finished product. And a screenplay, you turn it over to, you know, I'm exaggerating only slightly, a million other people, and they all have their jobs to do, from the director and actor, which everybody's familiar with, to the greens people and the set people, the set decorators, to the people who do the music and everything. And so basically a screenplay is a blueprint, and it's also very structured. Screenplays tend to be extremely structured in the way that they're written, and other forms of fiction can be less so.
Because it's going to be turned into a movie, so to speak.
Well, if you're writing for a Hollywood movie, they tend to follow what they call the three-act structure, and, you know, it makes it easier for the audience to get into it and follow it and stay hooked, I think.
How much does someone have to know about the technical side of movie making to think that they could try their hand at a screenplay?
I don't think you have to know a whole lot about the technical side of it, but you do need to know about screenplay form. And, you know, you don't want to write a screenplay, you know, there's certain conventions to a screenplay where they have exterior scenes, interior scenes, and everything is delineated because the production people break that down in terms of shooting. So you have to know a little bit about the technical aspect, but I don't think you need to know in terms of, you know, lighting or that kind of thing. There are specialists who do all of that. And in fact, you don't want to be too technical in a screenplay. Directors tend to line that stuff out, or, you know, if it even gets that far, because they look at that and they read amateur into it.
And indeed, there are plenty of people submitting screenplays all over the place. It seems to me one of the challenges is to make your plot come through the dialogue more, because you rarely will develop, I mean, of course you could have a narrator, but in most cases do not.
Well, you want the plot to unfold both visually and through dialogue. There's been some argument at the Writers Guild where some people say you should be able to tell your story completely visually. I am not one of those people. I like dialogue. I think good, crisp dialogue is, you know, essential to a movie. But on the other hand, what you don't want to do, what the big they, don't like is dialogue that's too on the nose. You don't want to say things straight out. You kind of want to say them subtly and in subtext. And kind of the best example of that, although way over the top, is I don't know if you remember in Annie Hall where Woody Allen and Annie Hall are standing on his balcony or something.
Yeah,
and they're talking, and there's the subtitles
yeah.
of what they're really thinking or what they're really saying.
Paul, we're going to have to leave it there. Paul Marks, screen doctor, script doctor. We'll be back with more after these messages.
Hi, I'm Anthony, owner of The Duplication Connection, and I'm here to ask you a question. Has one of your friends or relatives sent you a DVD from another country and you discover that it won't play in your machine? At The Duplication Connection, we can convert any country-coded DVD to play in the U.S. We can also convert your DVDs to play in any country on the planet. Call me at The Duplication Connection at area code 831-373-0493 or visit our website at www.duplicationconnection.com.
Don't dread the Fed. Sure, the Federal Reserve is raising interest rates. Seems like it happens every day around noon. But does that affect your home loan? Not necessarily. Talk to the pros at Gold Coast Financial. They can help you bid your dread of interest rates goodbye. Don't wait another minute. Start living in your dream home while sending your interest rate nightmares packing. Gold Coast Financial. 649-8757. 649-8757. Gold Coast Financial. 831-649-8757.
Not that long ago, three bears were discussing how difficult it is to get a good night's sleep. What you sleep on is paramount to any sleep success. Papa Bear complained about how he was tired after tossing and turning all night. Mama Bear complained about sinking into each other like sleeping in a hammock.
You can't even turn the mattress over to use the other side.
Then Zizi the Panda told them about his perfect night's sleep on his Monterey mattress. It has much higher quality padding to prevent the hammock syndrome and has two great sides for twice the mattress life.
You know, panda bears are really smart. Hi, this is Brian Gingrich. At Monterey Mattress, our family has been building the finest latex, foam, and innerspring mattresses for over 20 years. We supply most of the leading resorts on the Monterey Peninsula. With such high standards of quality, customers purchase their mattresses here at factory prices and then ship to their homes across the nation. Discover the difference a Monterey Mattress can make in your life. Come see us at our factory showroom in Sand City or online at montereymattress.com.
We're back, America, back on track, and I'll send Paul Paul Marks a couple of my screenplays. I think they work. I think they work, even without subtitles. And now it's time for Seton Notes. The headline said it all. I'm in to win. Hillary Clinton announced that she is running for president in 2008. Surprise, surprise. Rather than tell us why she wants to win, I'm in to win. She is stating that winning is what matters, not what it would be that she would win. She doesn't tell us her passion, what she feels needs to be changed the most and the fastest. She doesn't list the people whom she most wants to help in our schools, our elder care facilities, our ghettos, our New Orleans. I'm in to win. She doesn't apologize for the wrong vote on Iraq or her years of silence since. I'm in to win. She doesn't say, oops, it was disgraceful how I got involved in the Terry Schiavo case. Nope, she's in to win. You have to know that a ton of consultants were consulted to come up with that line. That's what they wanted to see on the front pages of the Sunday papers and the first thing out of the mouths of the Sunday chat show participants. But what do you suppose was their message through I'm in to win? Are they speaking to the millions of people who don't think she can win, millions who strongly don't want her to win? Was there a subtext that she wouldn't accept the vice presidency? It's really a waste, you have to feel, when you see someone so driven to win, victory for its own sake, not what can be done, kind of like the Bush boy sitting alone on a Sunday night watching a football game on television and almost choking to death on a pretzel. He'd won. There he was with nothing to do but watch a football game on the most aptly named Idiot Box. Hillary wouldn't waste that kind of time. She'd be out doing, no doubt, pushing legislation that met the consultant's specifications, not about what would be best for America, but would best enhance her reelection bid. There was a time when Ms. Clinton would try to mask her ambition. Not anymore. She either got tired or forgot, or the consultant said it didn't matter so much if she let it drop. They'll give her persona, her extraordinary lack of character, combined with a willingness to exhibit her shallow purpose, a little dab here and another there, and spin her again, like hammering out the dents in a children's toy, daubing on some paint and giving it a good twist. Ms. Clinton won her Senate reelection bid in November. She was campaigning for another six-year term in the nation's highest legislative body, the exclusive club of 100 members. There's something sordid about running on the basis of a bald-faced lie. I don't understand why she jumped in this early. Not that she's alone. There are almost a dozen in some stage of official campaigning for the presidency, others on the verge. The level of humility in the process has dropped through the floor. It's shameful that the candidates have such little respect for the office, for the work, that they would cast themselves swine before pearls. And that's Eaton Notes for January 22nd. Tomorrow, we're going to have Carolyn Kay, who's a media expert, talking with us, and Moira Rusin, an economist with the Monterey Institute of International Studies. And, of course, you can always find out the latest at qnnamerica.com. And you can send us your comments and suggestions, only those delivered with a civil tongue, please, to us at info@qnnamerica.com. So join us again tomorrow and every weekday right here at America Back on Track.
Here's good news about your money. Monterey County Bank has won the Bauer Financial 5-Star Superior Rating for financial strength and stability, making it one of the safest banks in Monterey County for your money. It's nice to know your money is in a safe place, but there are even more reasons to bank with Monterey County Bank. They now have 4 convenient locations in Carmel, Monterey, Carmel Valley, and Pacific Grove. And Monterey County Bank is the oldest locally owned bank, now celebrating its 30th anniversary serving you. Here's another important point. Local businesses have come to trust and rely on Monterey County Bank's position as the county's number one SBA small business lender. Safety, convenience, and local people you can trust. That's Monterey County Bank. Stop in at one of our 4 branches and find out why you can bank on us. Monterey County Bank, SBA preferred lender and equal housing lender, member FDIC.
Attention homeowners, this is Sharon Law Tucker. You've heard me talk about various mortgage types over the past several months. Now I want to talk to you about reverse mortgages. I believe that quality of life and having options is extremely important. The biggest concern for most seniors today is to stay in their homes, yet they are living on an income that can no longer meet their basic living needs. Through reverse mortgage loan products, I can help senior homeowners stay in their homes, get tax-free cash for any purpose, including monthly income, home improvements, medical care, travel, and much more. I can help you remove the stress and worry from your life, take the burden of responsibility from your children, and enjoy a better quality of life. If you are a senior homeowner, call me today for a free copy of the Reverse Mortgage Handbook. I'll send it to you at no cost, no obligation. Phone me, Sharon Law Tucker, at the Reverse Mortgage Center, 831-809-1705, 831-809-1705. Pacific Home Lending is licensed by the California DRE, license number 01254837.
You're listening to KRML, Carmel, California. The news from QNN is next.
This is the Quality News Network. Another violent day in and around Baghdad today, with as many as 100 people killed in mostly Shiite areas by several bombings and a mortar attack. At least 156 people were wounded. An Iraqi official reports that the mayor of Bakuba was kidnapped by 20 armed gunmen today. His office was blown up afterwards. Today, one U.S. soldier was killed by a roadside bomb in a northern Iraqi province. This weekend, the two-day death toll for the American military was at least 27. Mission. Two Marines were killed on Sunday in the Anbar province. 25 troops were killed on Saturday, making it the third deadliest day for the U.S. military since the war began. President Bush will deliver his State of the Union address tomorrow evening. He's expected to talk about energy security. Freshman Senator Jim Webb of Virginia will deliver the Democratic Party's response afterwards. On the eve of his address, the CEOs of 10 major companies are urging the president to support mandatory reductions in climate.